You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
My name is Muhannad Al-Qaisi. I come from Beit Lahem. I was born and grew up in the Hesha refugee camp. And right now I work at the Joint Advocacy Initiative, which is related for YMCA and YWCA. I have been traveling around the world, telling the story of Palestine and talking about myself. Palestine for us, you know, it's not, now it's become not only a country, it's a cause for everyone and for every human. But in the last 15 years, I have been convincing people and talking to people about Palestine. And it seems to me that we had to pay 60,000 people to be killed, so can people at least get attention to Palestine. I traveled to more than 25 countries, and in many places I was mentioning Palestine, they think it's Pakistan. So they don't even know about Palestine. And unfortunately, this genocide had to happen so people know more about Palestine and about what's happening. And we are really sorry that we had to pay this price, 20,000 children who got killed, many mothers, many women, many old people. And they are still starving until today. And live on Instagram, on Facebook. And you all can just go live and see the people are being burned. I think that's happening because people look at Palestinians under or like below. And if this happens to an American or a British or a European, the whole world will stand for that. At October 7, 1,200 Israelis, women, children also got killed. In that day, the whole world stood for Israel. But in that year, 2023, 900 people from January 1st until October were killed, and I bet you if you even heard about it. Not you as an audience, but the whole world. And that has been happening since 77 years. We are being killed, slaughtered, punished, arrested, taken hostages, and we have been shouting, but no one really came to help. Only when we got attacked severely, and 2 million people are being starved, until the world turned an eye to Palestine, and then they start to follow up, or at least stood. And even with all these prices we are paying, the world is not giving us our justice. Like, they are not still considering if it's a genocide or not, considering if it's a violence or not. And many countries, they're still thinking about, is it the time to stand for Palestinians or not? So to feel that you are under human or like you are not a human, this is something really hurting all the time. Even though, if you look at the Palestinians, wherever they go, they do good stuff. Even in the UK, if you know the Palestinian community, doctors, physicians, and in a very high. We are number one country educated in the Arab world. And before 1948, we used to send doctors and experts and scientists to teach the Gulf countries and to teach many Arab countries. And we had to ship Orange, and we had a seaport, and we had airports, we had football team. So when Israel established, they built this idea on saying that this land is empty and we deserve it. But it's very important to know that there was a people, there was a culture, there was a history, and there was, you know, a whole country standing there. So what I feel today is angry. What I feel is sad. I am not doing okay physically or mentally. Because for 22 months, we are waking up every day on a genocide, continuous and ongoing. And the 77 years of the Palestinians, it seems that it's not enough for the whole world. And they want to keep the genocide going. They want to keep the displacement of people. They want to keep attacking Palestinians until they get rid of them all and kick them out. If I want to talk about myself a little bit, I was born in a refugee camp in Beit Lahem. And I still live in the refugee camp until today. My family were expelled and forced to leave the village of Beit Jibrin in 1948. Before that, my family had to own a big piece of land. We were fine. We were like very fine family. And in one night in October, like in 1948, my family, suddenly they became refugees. And when the Israelis came, all these organized groups, when they came to our family, we thought it would be for 1 week or 10 days. Unfortunately, it's lasted until 77 years. Until today, we are refugees. But only 77 years ago, we had a village, we had a home. And what happened in that year is just exactly if you are living in your city in the UK and there was a danger coming for you for a couple of hours or a couple of days, so you just move a little bit outside. That's what happened with our families in 1948. More than 750,000 Palestinians, they had to leave their homes and to become refugees. And until today, we are spread all over the world and also in the Arab countries around Palestine. For example, in Jordan, we represent more than 70% of the population in Jordan. In Lebanon, there's refugee camps. In Syria, the same. So we are spread everywhere. And here I want to say something about it. Part of my family who lives in Jordan, they are not allowed to come back to Palestine. Like my uncles from my mom's side, my grandparents, all of them, they are located in Jordan. They are not allowed to come back. But if you are a Jewish or if you have any relation with Israel or Jewish, you are allowed to come to the country and to take a citizen and to take an ID and to do like to have all the privileges to live in Israel. So imagine my uncles and my family in Jordan, they never been to Palestine, like the new generations. They never visited my mom, who lives now in the West Bank with me. Anyway, so I grew up in the refugee camp, and this wasn't a fun experience, even though there is some part of it to be in a refugee camp, but still it wasn't. I was born in 1988, and at that time, Israel, the first intifada started, and Israel, after a couple of years, decided to put a fence around the whole camp where I live and to leave one rolling gate in the front of my house, because I live on the edge, on the main road of the camp. So what I remember from my childhood until 1994 is that settlers coming from the main road to my house and destroy everything. That's the first 5 years of me as a child in the refugee camp. So when you go back to your memories, all what I remember when I try to remember is a fence and rolling gate, settlers coming to my house and then grabbing my mom and, you know, ruining everything in the kitchen and in the house. And that used to happen twice every week at least. So Palestinian from the camp come to throw stones on the cars, they leave or run away, settlers come and attack my home. So for the 5 years, I have experienced all this, and that's all stuck in my memory until today. All what I remember is just the fence, which is 11 meter, rolling gate, settlers coming into my house, destroying everything. In 2001, or in 2000, the second intifada started, and I was 13 years old. I remember in that day when the Israelis attacked one of the buildings in Gaza because they were chasing one of Hamas people. And in that building, there was, in 2001, 14 children got killed in my age. I was 13. So in my classroom, we decided to take action and to go out of the school marching. And we walked from the Dehesha refugee camp all the way to the Rachel tomb, where the wall is, and we started to throw stones. We were around 20 kids, only 13 and 14 years old. And while hiding behind one of the trees, the sniper start to shoot at us live ammunition, even though we are still children, like we are very young, like we can't weather or hurt or destroy the watching tower where he's sitting. So the sniper shot at us and shot one of my friends in his heart, Mila Kifah. And as children, we had to carry him and then put him in a car and then drive to the hospital. In the emergency room, I just discovered that's a serious, like this is not a joke where we are living and what we are facing. Like, you know, you live under occupation, but nothing hurts you or gets you direct. But when we carried the body of Kifah and his eyes flipped in the car and we carried him to the emergency room, I was standing and his body was like this. The doctors looking at each other because they don't know if they have to tell us or not. But we find out that he was killed or died. Then the doctor just threw the news, the family came, and me and my group of children or friends, we had to go all the way to the mountain because we were afraid. Like, we don't know what is this. It's the first body, dead body I see in my life. It's the first incident, the first blood, the first smell, and I still have it all in my brain until today. 1 year after, in another incident, you know, we sometimes, if you put me in a refugee camp, you put me in a 1 kilometer square with fences, school crowded, no healthcare, no playgrounds, no rights, very crowded all the time. Me and my family, my uncles, everyone, we are living in one bedroom, like one room. So we are around 25 people living in one floor, all the uncles and all their children. Because in the top of my house, because I live on the main road, always there is a military station or base where the Israelis are there, the soldiers watching the roads. So we were not allowed to build the second floor. So So we are squeezed all until 1994 when the Israeli left. We managed to build the second and the third floor. But anyway, throwing stones became one of the options on a Friday morning. Like, you want to play, you want to throw stones, or you want to do something else. That's our reality. I didn't want to go to throw stones. I didn't want to go in this situation. But it's one of the options that the occupation put you in. So on one of Fridays, we went to throw stones in a village called Al-Khadr. As also children, I was 14. When we went very close to the main road to throw stones, the Israeli military ran after us. And there was many, you know, young kids, you know, just doing this activity. When I was running from the soldiers, Mahmoud, he was behind me, one of my friends. And to cross from a field to another, you have to open the fences, which is the borders between the lands. I am skinny, so I used to do it quickly and then run. Mahmoud, he's a little bit, you know, chubby and fat, so he did not manage to do it through. And while we were running, because we were running under a vine, you know, vines, grapes, so we were like this and running and open all the fences. And he was behind me. And the shooting is extremely, like, so many bullets. And the bullets go through the leaves, you know, and the dust goes out and you can hear it. But the last thing I heard in that day is when Mahmoud got shot in his head behind me, like directly in the head, all his blood, boom, on me. And I had to keep running. I went to one of the families and I hide there. Like, one of the mothers, she took me, she put me in the house, she asked me to change my clothes, and she put me among her children. The soldiers came, they searched. They thought I am one of her kids. And I stayed there until at least 7 p.m. We were the last two people in that field. So they informed my mom that your child, Muhannad, he was shot or killed or arrested, we don't know. So she had to go to the hospital and to check if it's me in the hospital or not. I mean, these stories I'm telling you, it's part of our children before October 7. And many stories like this in the West Bank every day. If I want to talk about my friends who got arrested when I was 14, we used to go to the schools and the Israelis come to arrest them, put them in jail up until they are 18 and 19. So I had to visit my friends, like, to switch the ID, my ID with their brother, to fake it, and then to go to the jail to arrest them. And I remember the first time I visited Rami, my friend. Palestinians, they are very close to each other. So when you have a friend, that means you have a real friend. Like, we hang out together. We live in a refugee camp, so it's safe for friendship. So you can sleep at their house, you can eat from them, they can come to my house. So the bonds between friends are very strong. And I remember I went to visit him when we were 16. And I went to the jail where he is, and I stood, and there's a fence between us. He's still, yeah, like, a child, and I'm still a child. And we stood there. We hug a lot as a Palestinians. Like, all my friends, we hug, like, every day. If we go in the morning, we have this thing, you know, to do. And we were there in the visit maybe for 40 minutes, silent. Like, just looking. And I couldn't feel good when I went home and he went to his cell. And he spent 4 years. For what? For a very silly action that he's taken against Israel. And he's a child. Like, when he was arrested, he was like a real child. Not an old, not mature. He don't know nothing. And I'm also telling you this story because there's hundreds of children and hundreds of Palestinians who are spending years and years in the darkness in the jail. After October 7, many of my friends, they got released. Our neighbors, we go to visit them. One of our neighbors, he got out after 32 years of the Israeli, you know, detained. Some people spent 43 and 45 years in the Israeli jails. But I'm talking about my friends only who spent 5 or 6 years or 4 years. When they go out, they are mentally not doing okay. Like, they put them in a cell for months without food, without care, without shower, questioning them, threatening them with their families and their sisters and their mothers. Like, if you don't say, if you don't admit that you did this, we're going to bring your sister or your mom. Or they go actually to their homes to threaten them, to take photos, and then to come back. And these people who are being arrested, like, in Palestine, this is like one of the issues that really touches me, because I know how much the jail is destroying people. You know, I know that when you put a little child who's 12 in the jail, with someone who's 55 or 70. Like, this is not suitable situation, all even to arrest people. And especially in October 7 and after, Israelis took everything from the prisoners and also filled the jail. I was reading before getting this talk, there is more than 15,000 Palestinians experienced arrestment in the last 22 months. 15,000 who got arrested either for 1 month, for day, for year, like for 2 years. And also there is the administrative detention, where they just take you to the jail without any court, without any complaint, without any, you know, sentence. They just have the right to put you inside. And there is thousands of people who are now in the Israeli jails, and they don't know why. On October 7, the administration of the jails came to the Israeli prisoners, to the Palestinian prisoners, and they took away everything in the room. So they can't heat the water, they don't have blankets, they don't have mattresses. Food was like very little. They give them 1 cup of beans and rice for the whole day. In the morning, they give them 1 piece of bread. In the evening, they give them like 1 vegetable. And my friend, when they got out, I was telling them, how do you manage? They said, in the morning, when we get the first meal, which is 1 sausage and 1 piece of bread, we don't eat it. We put it aside. And then when we get lunch at 2, which is the cup, rice, beans, we also put it aside. In the evening, when we get 1 piece of vegetable, we eat it once. Because if we eat in the morning, that means we will be hungry all the day and craving, like starving, you know, to eat more. So we kept all the food until the evening. They used to bring the dogs and come, you know, inside the rooms and attack them. They raped some of the Palestinians live, like on cameras. They put some money, like they used iron bars and many things to put it inside their bodies. And they filmed it and they spread it. So I don't believe any human being will be able to get through this situation and then just come back to our society's normal. And for many of the of my friends who experience something like this, they are silent, like they are not doing good. I know them, you know, before the jail they used to be fun. And any man wouldn't be in this situation, you know, to get raped. He will not be doing good after. So I'm talking about these things because I'm talking about the West Bank. I know all the eyes on Gaza, and what's happening in Gaza is the real genocide and really like beyond the imagination. But what I'm telling you about our reality also in the West Bank and what's happening. Since October until today, like my camp, for example, get raids in weekly basis. Like every week, the Israelis come to the camp and then they arrest people, they raid, they shoot, they kill Palestinians. More than 1,200 Palestinians got killed in the West Bank since the war of Gaza. So in my camp, when they come during the evening, during the night at 2 or 3 a.m., they come with 200 or 150 soldiers. They park the cars, the vehicles, and then they come inside the camp. I remember during the war, one night, they collected 45 of like young people from my camp, and they spread all the soldiers in the camp to bring these Palestinians, because there was a new captain who will be in charge of our refugee camp. The old one, Karim, he's gone. There is another one. And when he came to start to be in charge, he wanted to introduce himself to the camp and to the people of the camp. So he collected or arrested, detained 45 young Palestinians, brought them to one of the cultural centers. They empty the first floor and they blind them, they handcuff them, and they put them in one of the rooms for almost 2 hours. And then he got himself office in that organization. And he started to ask one by one to come from the room to his office, just take off the blind, and then say, like, I'm the new captain. And then he sent them back to the room. 45 rounds of introduction of himself to these people. And then at the end, he put them all outside with a banner of Israel flag, and he took a selfie, just like this, and he left. So he ruined the whole camp. We are about 18,000 people living in a refugee camp. So he just gave us a hard time. We couldn't sleep, arrested all these 45 Palestinians, put them in a room, like disrespect them, punish them, grab them from the house in the night. And then he just said, good morning to you, bye-bye, I'm leaving. Without any reason. And that's the apartheid, or that's the punishment, or that's the insult that we are facing every day. If we want to talk about the West Bank also, about like what's happening now by the Israeli settlers. So Israel already built illegal 250 Israeli settlements in the West Bank. The West Bank where we live, it's supposed to be the state of Palestine. So illegally, Israel moving settlers from Israel to our lands in the West Bank, where we live and where we move and where we study and where we like practice our life. And recently, Israel, the government, armed 30,000 of these settlers and raised the number of the settlers. And they built also another 120 new outposts in the West Bank. When we are talking about building more and bringing more settlers from Israel to the West Bank, that means there will be more pressure on the Palestinians who live there by building more checkpoints. Now in the West Bank, there is more than 1,000 checkpoints. If you want to drive 1 hour, you will be stopped 3 or 4 times. If you want to drive for 2 hours, like the other day I went to Nablus, I showed my ID to the Israeli soldier 6 times. 6 times, each time I stopped in the checkpoint for 1 hour. Plus the insult, plus the fear, plus the attacks on your belongings, like open your phone, they open your phone, they see your photos. Sometimes they move the photos, like they take it. They open your conversation and they read your messages and they know everything that's happening about your life. And settlers now are getting more strength by the government and they are building more and more settlements. For example, before yesterday, they attacked one of the Palestinian villages called Al-Mughayr and they did the curfew for the whole village. They arrested most of the men in the village, got them out, and they destroyed 4,000 olive trees in 2 hours. They brought all the bulldozers and then they just destroyed all the fields around the village. And when we are talking about olive trees, maybe you know about it for Palestinians. It's a very important tree and very holy and they are attached. People have their history with this tree. So these trees used to be 200 years. And a silly boy from Poland with a bulldozer come to destroy all of this in 2 hours. And that's insane for us to take. Like we have the genocide in Gaza, but also in the West Bank, they are harassing us, confiscating our lands, destroying our trees and building a new settlement where we actually live. And every house or every outpost being established in the West Bank, in the other side, there is a demolition of a Palestinian house. I also was reading this morning, more than 3,000 Palestinian houses got demolished recently. If we are talking about Jenin, Tul Karim, and Nur Shams camps, 3 refugee camps in the north of the West Bank, 45,000 Palestinians are displaced, living in the shelters now, like living outside their homes and their camp in the streets. We as YMCA, we help them, like we send whatever we could, like, or we just like have a program where we help this displaced Palestinian who live there. So on daily basis, Israel also demolish houses in the West Bank and give the land for a new people who come. And even like to move among the West Bank, it's not allowed for us. So I just want to summarize this quickly in what's happening. We feel the same project that happened in Gaza, same project also taking a place in the West Bank, Israel putting a lot of efforts to displace Palestinians outside of their home. Like they don't want any Palestinians to be anymore in the land. And they are loudly saying this in the news, in the press, in the government. They are taking this action against Palestinians. And of course, it's represent with no humanity. And I don't know, the Israeli society, I think, after like a deep analyzing, they don't look at the Palestinians as a human being. And that's why they have the power and the courage to come and to kill. Like I ask myself sometimes, I'm sitting in the checkpoint for 2 hours. Like one girl who's 18 or 19 years old, carrying gun, giving hard time for 1,000 people. All children, teachers, doctors, lawyers. Everyone is going to his work in the morning. One girl only, she's standing there with her gun and giving hard time for maybe 200 or 300 cars standing in the checkpoint. And when you reach to her, hello, good morning. Yes, where are you going? Ramallah. Okay, wait 2 minutes. I wait, then she can go. The 2 minutes is just to make more traffic and more traffic and more traffic. And I think which system raise up the children or the young people to do this for other people? I mean, this 18 years old girl, she could be somewhere else, like swimming or doing arts or doing her studies, but not to stand in the checkpoint, giving other people hard time and feeling proud about it. All the people, all the Israelis now in Gaza and in the West Bank, putting their guns on Palestinians and they are shooting them. I don't see them as a human. Like they lost their mind. I don't know who can just carry the gun and shoot one like this. It happened. It happened the other day in Masafer Yatta. It happened in Ramallah directly. Like they don't think, as if you just, you know, like when you have like, I don't know, insects, and then sometimes you do like this. This is exactly how they act against Palestinians, because their society raised them up in the way the Palestinian is good to kill them. They are not human. We are not equal. If you don't kill him today, he will kill you later. So it's better to eliminate them. And on the news, we saw when they asked them, why are you killing the children? Like, why do you kill the children? They clearly said, if he grow up, he will be Hamas. So it's better from now to kill them. And that's why the number reached to 20,000. 20,000. The other day I was reading and preparing about Gaza. Normally, what do? I go for categories like killed Palestinian, injured Palestinian, displaced Palestinian. While I was searching, there was a new category, missing children. 21,000 missing children. We don't know where they are. When I digged more, I found out that 3,000 of them were buried in the mass grave. Like, you just around the hospital, you see baby, you don't know for whom, you put them in the mass grave. 4,000 of them until today still under the rubble. Like the building was bombed, the father is out, he knows that there's 5 children, he reported them. Until today we don't know where they are. Another 4,000, they are there with another family. Like they got the phone number from the north to the south, they called, they said, Ahmed is with me. But they don't know the family, you know. And another 4 in the streets, they are orphaned, they don't have parents anymore. Like around the hospital. I was watching an interview with a doctor, and he's from Qatar. And they asked him, what's the hardest thing you experience in Gaza? He said, I was working with one of the injured people, and we were done with the treatment, like we are done. And he said, you can go home. The guy from Gaza said, I don't have a home. Where to go? Then he said, go to your family. He said, I don't have family. People got nothing to go back to. No memories, no streets, no shops, no mosques, no churches, no hospitals, nothing. Israel destroyed every single building in Gaza. And I'm asking myself why they are doing this, to erase the history of the Palestinians. So Palestinians now, when they want to go back to somewhere, they don't find memories, no streets, no buildings, no family, nothing. All of this to put the pressure on the Palestinians in Gaza, the 2 million people, to leave. And the whole world is looking at us and thinking, maybe it's a genocide. Like maybe, we are not sure. Maybe the hostages, the 10 hostages, Trump stand, the 10 hostages, 10,000 Palestinians in the jail, 600 children below 18 and 17. You look around, what to do? Like what's more we could do? What? To give more blood? To die more than this? To create a new way how we die so we convince the people? Horrible. Our mothers, our families, we are not doing good at all. Like, we are not doing good at all. None. You can see things happening in Palestine. We can smile. In the morning, I smile. But I am not good, you know? You can't see, like, 60,000 people being killed. And we see everything, like the photos. Like, is it normal to see people are being burned and running and you just go grab your breakfast and continue the day? Or is it because they are Palestinian? It's fine. We are used to them, like to be killed or dead. No, this is wrong. This is completely wrong. I think I will stop here and take questions if you have. Thank you.
My daughter works with Embrace. Yeah, you talked about getting information from websites just recently before you were giving this talk. Is that a reliable source? Because we want to know we're hearing the truth. And there's obviously suspicion that Hamas can build up higher figures than figure which is right, the number of people died and all that. How do we know whether the evidence is correct? If you get this information, we'd be interested to know the website so that we can also get it.
Thank you. You know, when you do research, you want to give the source. I did my master, and I think you can just go like in any social media or in any, it's videos, like any, yes, it's very important to give the right information. And I can share many websites like the United Nations or OCHA or Beit Salem or Yesh Din, many people and many organizations documenting what's happening. And even some people, they lose hope with document. Like they say, why should we document? No one's doing anything. No, we will keep document what's happening because we believe that justice will come one day and we have to prove and we have to have evidence and photos and numbers and everything. But the health ministry of Palestine, they have a very good website. Day by day, they put the numbers. OCHA, Beit Salem, Yesh Din, Yani UNRWA, believed resources are online. And also, if anyone needs any more information, you can contact me or Embrace, and we will be happy to support any information for you about what's happening. But really, like the social media, the journalists in Gaza, by the way, more than 260 journalists in Gaza got killed during this war. And the last like famous or well-known one, Anas al-Sharif, he's Al Jazeera reporter, and he was threatened by Israel many times. And at the end, they accused him of being Hamas member. But like in the last 2 years, I saw him live 24 hours. So I don't know how they call him, you know, from Hamas. But Israel always make up stories when they want to assassinate or kill any good voice about Palestine. But yeah, I'm happy to share any information and websites.
Thanks so much for your testimony. I just find myself asking, are there in your experience any exceptions? Can you think in your life of any times when in Palestine there have been warm and friendly and respectful relationships between any Israelis and you or any of your Palestinian friends or relatives?
Like before October 7, the situation between Israelis and Palestinians were kind of fine. Like we could accept each other. But to be honest, after October 7, the two nations or the two people now are very far away from each other. Like the hatred between the two nations or the two people is more. That's the peak, like that's the most. I don't think any Palestinian now want to accept an Israeli or any Israeli even could accept or take any Palestinian. Even the people who used to work in construction business in Israel, they have a very good relation with Israeli companies and people, and they used to work there for 20 years. 400,000 of them now not allowed to work in Israel. So Israel replaced all these people with another people from India and another people from abroad. They brought them to replace with the work. So to be honest, I'm not optimistic about any good. But very important thing here to differentiate. As a Palestinian, I'm talking about also myself and many of my people that I know, we don't have any problem with the Jewish or Judaism. And that's actually the first time in this war, our new generation and our mothers and many people around us, they could differentiate between Zionism and the Jewish people. Because in the demonstration abroad in New York, in London, we saw many Jewish people standing with Palestine. So if there is any mixture between Zionist and Jewish before, or misunderstanding, now it's very clear for us as Palestinian, we are against the Zionist, but not any Jewish, because he is Jewish. Because many Jewish voices standing against the genocide, and they are doing a great job supporting Palestine. So Palestinians or Arabs with the Jewish, Muslim, Jewish, we don't have any problem. And we also believe that's the Holy Land. Everyone has a claim, and everyone should or have the right to come to live in the Holy Land. Christian, Muslim, you know, Jewish, but no one at all has the right to kill the other people because of the land or because of the house. You don't have the right to do this. You can't just say God promised me a land 2,000 years ago and now I come to kill you and to take it from you. That's not logical. many children and many people got killed because of this idea. And many people now in the West Bank being killed because of these groups who come to the West Bank and say, God promised us with this land, so it's fine to attack your house, to burn your car, to cut off your trees, and to take the land because God promised me. And he come like in the front of you and he say this, literally. Like he say, God gave it to me, Palestinian, go out. This is mine. And then he say this in the morning, in the evening he come with his friends, with Molotov cocktails, with guns, burn the cars, burn the houses, burn the trees, destroy them, and then he leave. And he do this continuously. Yes.
Not a question, and I really want to apologise. I want to apologise for my government. I want to apologise for everybody that won't recognise the genocide, that won't take action, that keeps selling arms to Israel. And just to express my hopelessness, my daily prayer for Palestine, and just not seeing anything happen, and I'm just so, so, so sorry.
Thank you. Thank you. One of the things that gives us hope is you and these people and many other people who are doing great things for Palestine. It's a walk or a journey toward justice. And always there is people come together in this road. And I know many of the people here, they believe in our cause and you believe. And one of the things, like I get the question, how do you get hope, how you are strong, how you can keep going among all of this, why you don't leave the country, why you are there. If you were in the morning in the prayer, Reverend Sue, she was on the stage giving the prayer in the morning. I don't know how many months after the war started, she's 90 years. I'm in my office working in the morning. She knocked the door, she came in. Good morning. Yes, what's up? Come, make coffee. And she said, I came all the way from the UK to apologize for you. 90 years. She come and she still stand. And she defend. Only if there was no children are being killed, it would even be a beautiful cause to stand with the people who are living in injustice. But unfortunately, the killing went too. It's a beautiful to walk these walks and to fight these fights with the poor people, with the people who live in the injustice. I mean, I don't want to say enjoy these days, but always I have been convinced of who I am. And always I have been close to myself and to my friends who are fighting together against this. It's a cause of justice and humanity. And I know that there is many people who are walking with us in this. And it's beautiful, except the killing and the blood. But we will keep going, and this will end one day. I 100% believe. You know, if you look at the history, if you look what Israel is now destroying itself from the inside. A lot of people think Israel is winning or proud or this lie could go and go and go. You shouldn't be proud of killing 60,000 people. If the community support this idea, you are losing you and the community. Which community you want to send your kids to be raised in when they are promoting killing the other people? Which school is this? Which university? Which temple? Which street that you want to let your kids grow on or up in while they are supporting killing children? Because when they grow up, they will be Hamas. This is insane. So I think on the long term, we will be in the right place. So thank you.
We have time for a few more questions. I will try and get around as many of you as possible. I'd just like to say we encourage some questions rather than statements, please. But we will try and get around as many of you as we can. I'm going to come over here now.
Hi. How can we help you?
Okay. Good question. Being here already helped for me, at least, to listen and to hear us. And it makes me feel good that some people care. And actually, to be green belt, to see the flags and the kufiya everywhere, this is also means a lot. If you want to help, if we are talking about today and now, Embrace have a stand, Embrace the Middle East, they have a stand, and we are starting a campaign to help the children, the detained children. And we started this campaign, and we are trying to receive or like to support signature from the people. We want to reach 400 plus. So I really, I ask everyone to go to the stand and to take this and to sign and just to be on the stand. Also, if you are talking about today, You can also go to Embrace Stand and to donate olive trees, because my work is to distribute olive trees for farmers. I started to work at this project in 2013, and we started with distributing around 6,000 to 7,000 olive trees, and we give these trees for the Palestinian farmers so they can maintain and keep their lands, because if it's empty, it's easier for Israel to come and to take it. So donating olive trees means a lot, at least for my work and for the Palestinian farmers who live there. The project is very successful. Last year, we planted 90,000 olive trees in the West Bank, all the West Bank. Yeah, so it's a very, very good way and directly help the farmers and the people who are now suffering from the Israeli settler attacks. Every single day, there is uprooting or attacks in olive trees. So these olive trees help the Palestinians to plant, to cultivate, to express their anger. A lot of people now going toward farming because they want to maintain the land and face the Israeli occupation non-violently. So it's a non-violence acting that they are doing. And I have been traveling a lot asking people to donate these olive trees. So please, if you can, go to the stand. This is very important, you know, the signature, the campaign for the children detention, and also to donate olive trees. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you again to Mohanad for being here. We really appreciate him sharing his experiences with us. And thank you all for your thoughtful questions.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.